Hey guys, this is Jeff, one of the creators of the Common Geeking program, and also the host of this episode. Before the episode begins, I've got some announcements to make. The first one is some bad news just about the quality of this episode. My portable hard drive died yesterday, so the episode got a bit screwed up, and I had to work off of a draft that I posted on Sunday. I think I got it pretty up to snuff, but if you're noticing any kind of lower quality audio, that's the reason why. And the second thing, I'm announcing that one of our reps, Matt Canavan, is actually stepping down as a regular from the show. He just had a lot of work to do. He's still going to stay on and help and probably guest a few times and maybe come back in the future. But for now, we've replaced that open eighth slot with a very special person, and you can see who that is by listening to this episode. Okay, cue the music. Welcome back to the Common Geeking Program. We're basically like a book club or like a common reading program, except with geek culture. We're gonna have four people discuss a topic from their own geeky, nerdy perspectives. So, really exciting stuff this week. Our guest from episode 9, Laura Kramer, is now a full-fledged regular on this podcast. So, Laura, why don't you talk about what you're gonna be repping today?
Thanks. Today, I am going to be repping... Oh, my name is Laura. Hello.
Hi, Laura.
Sometimes I use words. It's going to be great. Today, I am repping a book series called The Circle of Magic by Tamora Pierce, which is something that I read like 8,000 times when I was growing up.
All right. And second is... Pat?
Oh. Yeah. Hi, I'm Pat Brem. And this week, I'm going to be repping the domain of Coheed and Cambria / the Amory Wars.
Oh, Amory. I thought it said Armory.
Me too.
Everybody thinks that.
Are you sure it didn't autocorrect to that in the chat?
I don't think it did.
But I'm going to look this up right now.
I'm going to look it up too, so you can't lie to me.
What? Why would I lie?
I don't know. Because you don't like me? Nope, it did not autocorrect, bitch.
Oh, okay. Fine. Oh, yeah, you're right. It says Amory. Okay, listen, typos are important because everyone in Keenan's episode thought that he was talking about mortality.
Instead of morality.
Instead of morality, because he wrote mortality a bunch in the chat. It was really awkward. He, like, gave us a bunch of videos, and I was just like, that was really interesting, Keenan, but that had nothing to do with death.
Are you trying to kill him faster?
All right, and after that long tangent, third is our third host. Or host, I'm the host. Our third guest on the podcast. I just can't speak today. Why don't you introduce yourself, mysterious third guest?
Hi, I'm Courtney Kuhn, and my domain is animated movie The Land Before Time.
Woo-wee. And if you don't know what that is, then...
You had no childhood.
Go redo your childhood.
Yeah.
Today, we're going to be talking about Steven Universe. Steven Universe is a cartoon on Cartoon Network. I had them watch a bunch of episodes. We'll summarize those one by one. Let's do a quick summary of Steven Universe. I'm going to give a little bit of summary of the series as a whole, and then I'm going to have my lovely reps try their damnedest to summarize the episodes that I had them watch. So Steven Universe is about a boy named Steven Universe, and he lives with these three women who are the Crystal Gems. The Crystal Gems, they're rocks, and they project hard light bodies to give them form. Steven's mother was Rose Quartz, the leader of the Crystal Gems. After meeting Greg Universe, Steven's father, they fell in love, and Rose constructed herself a womb with her shape-shifting powers, and they gave birth to Steven, but since Steven had to have Rose's gem, Rose basically gave up her physical form so that Steven could have her gem. So Rose is, for all intents and purposes, dead, because Steven's got Rose's gem on his belly, the Rose Quartz gem. All of the gems have a gem somewhere on their body. The other three main characters are Garnet, Amethyst, and Pearl, and Steven! But basically, the gems are aliens from another planet, which is a constricted society where all of the gems have a specific purpose and order. So the entire show is about them rebelling against their home world. I don't think we're going to talk about the first episode, because I just had you guys watch that for context, the Laser Light Cannons episode.
That was such a good episode.
It's a really good episode.
We can summarize it if you want. Does anyone want to summarize Laser Light Cannon? Don't all jump up at once here. Okay, so I guess I'll summarize Laser Light Cannon since you guys are so short to the bit.
Give me the bits!
Story starts with, God, I don't fucking remember.
It's they're at the fry stand, aren't they? Is that it?
Yeah, I don't know if that's important, though.
They wanted just the bits!
Just the bits.
Just the bits, please!
Oh, this is the one with the red eye, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so Steven and the gems notice this giant thing floating in the sky, which they call a red eye. And the gems tell Steven that if the red eye gets closer to the planet, then it'll destroy the entire city. And then Pearl mentions that the only way that they can stop is with this laser light cannon that Rose Quartz, Steven's mother, used to own. They don't know where that is, and Steven thinks, I'm gonna go check to see with my dad and see if he has it. He goes to find Greg. He's in his van.
Let me drive my van into your heart. That was the best song in season one.
It's a good song.
It was pretty good.
Greg tells Steven that he doesn't know where it is, but if it was anywhere, it's probably in his storage shed. So Steven is searching through his storage shed, and he accidentally breaks a photo of Rose and Greg. And he's just like, oh, I'm sorry. And then Greg's like,
it's okay, buddy. If every pork chop were perfect, we wouldn't have hot dogs.
And it's all cute.
As the first time I saw Steven's dad, it was a nice interjection about his character.
Yeah,
I thought maybe Steven's dad wasn't that cool, which is why he wasn't around, but then boom, fantastic dad.
Yeah.
So then Steven sees this glowing, and he finds the laser light cannon, right? They bring it to the beach to go destroy this red eye, but they can't figure out how it works. Amethyst is like, oh, Steven's got Rose's gem, so she, like, takes Steven and smudges him on the
cannon. Just rubs him
cannon.
Up there.
Yeah. It doesn't work. Steven's, like, freaking out because he thinks that everyone's gonna die. He's, like, trying to calm himself down, and he tells himself, if every pork chop were perfect, we wouldn't have hot dogs. And then the light cannon turns on. So then they destroy the red eye, and Greg is all like, oh shit, Rose loved me, and she made the activation code to this giant weapon, this phrase that I say all the time.
Did he have any doubt that she loved him? Like, she literally killed herself to make a kid with him.
I don't know what a magic lady like her ever saw in a plain old dope like me.
I mean, he didn't have doubt, but it was like a kind of a bittersweet, oh, I miss my wife kind of moment. You know, it was sweet. So that was Laser Light Cannon. The second episode I had them watch was an episode called Giant Woman. Pat, why don't you talk about Giant Woman? I'm just going to tell you to do it.
In Giant Woman, Steven, Pearl, and Amethyst all go on this mission to find the Heaven Beetle or something.
Yeah, it's a gem thing.
The two personalities of Amethyst and Pearl kind of feud the entire time, and Steven's trying his hardest to get them to cooperate so that they can get this done, but Steven secretly wants to see them both fuse because he's recently figured out that they can do that.
Yeah, so the gems have a power where they can fuse to become a bigger gem, right?
Yeah. And Steven just, all he wants to do is see them turn into a giant woman.
Giant woman.
The song is so good.
And he sings a cute little song on a ukulele about it. Yeah.
And it's so good. So through the process of this entire thing, they get to the top and they find the Heaven Beetle's house, but he's not there. And then all of a sudden, this giant bird just starts attacking them. So they have to try to work together and try to fuse, but it's not working. The bird ends up eating Steven and his pet goat that was there the entire time.
Steven Jr., I think.
And I forgot to mention it. Yeah, Steven Jr.
I totally forgot about the goat.
In the stomach, Steven finds the Heaven Beetle, and then all of a sudden these hands start stabbing through the bird's stomach, and he sees that Pearl and Amethyst have become Opal. They are now working together as a giant woman.
Also, a really interesting thing about the gem fusions is that they're all voiced by famous singers.
I did not know that.
That's true.
Like, Sugalite was voiced by Nicki Minaj.
Oh, wow.
Oh my god. Really?
Yeah.
You got it, baby.
That's why Sugalite's second appearance, they don't have the voice for her, because they couldn't get Nicki Minaj to come to the, like,
that's
vocal recording for that one. She's a busy lady.
In a later episode, there's a character, she's talking about all the different fusions and talks about Sugalite, and they play, like, a sound clip from that episode. She's like,
she's not actually in this episode. Do we still have to pay her?
And it was really funny.
Cool.
That was a good description. The next episode, speaking of Sugalite, Laura, why don't you talk about that episode? I don't remember what that one's called. Oh, that one's Coach Steven.
Yep. Yeah. So I believe it was the 20th episode, and yes, I 100% pulled up Wikipedia because I wasn't 100% I was going to remember the specifics.
Nice.
And it starts with them going to like this huge communication hub. Apparently it's been causing all these issues, and Steven is trying to watch his cartoon, so they have to destroy it. But it's super big, and they're not strong enough to do it on their own. They form into Sugalite.
Who is the fusion of Garnet and Amethyst?
Garnet and Amethyst, yes. And Sugalite is this like gigantic, badass looking, kind of terrifying, spiky, sunglassed purple thing.
I forgot how great it feels to be me.
Sugalite goes totally crazy on this thing and just like destroys the crap out of it. And then Steven gets like a tiny cut on his forehead. And he wraps it up in bandages and goes hangs out with his friends. He's like, I'm so cool. And they're like, oh, what happened? He's like, I got a tiny scratch. And then he wants to be cool and, you know, wants to make up for that. So he decides that he's going to coach his friends and his dad into getting swole and stuff. And there's, of course, a wonderful song that goes along with that. Pearl feels really sad that she wasn't part of the fusion that happened. She also feels really inadequate compared to the fusion. She's very frail. She looks a little bit like a fairy. And so she doesn't feel like she's strong. And Steven doesn't help this at all because he goes, yeah, we're strong in the real way. And she's like, oh, shit, that's not me. That's not what I am. And Steven ends up coaching her through this because she's like, I'm not strong enough to get them apart. I'm not going to be able to do this. And so Steven's saying all the motivational things to Pearl instead of his friends. And he's like, you're strong in the real way. It's very sweet.
Okay, Courtney, third episode.
Pressure.
Alone together.
Right, so the episode opens with Steven and Garnet Amethyst and Pearl practicing dancing, essentially.
Pay attention now, Steven.
They're trying to show him their sequences of dances that make their fusions. He's trying to learn how to fuse, too, and it's just, like, not working at all. And he's getting very frustrated with it, and they're kind of encouraging him, telling him, you know what, it might not even be possible, because you're organic, and we're not organic. That disqualifies you, maybe. It's mostly Pearl that's kind of the naysayer there.
Because she's like, you have to be made out of pure light to shapeshift your body.
Yeah.
I'm special and I'm Pearl.
He leaves them and meets up with Connie later on the beach.
Connie is kind of his girlfriend.
Kind of his girlfriend, although at this point in the series, I don't think that's very firmly established yet.
Yeah, they're just friends, but...
they're very close.
But Steven's got a thing for Connie. Like, that was from the first episode that we saw her.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So he's talking to her and telling her about how just he had a shitty day and couldn't do anything right. And she was trying to make him feel better and was saying, like, hey, it's cool that you were, like, keeping up with the gems at all and dancing. She says that, like, I would be so nervous because people are going to be staring at me. He stands up and just, like, covers his eyes and holds out his hand and is like, dance with me. So they start dancing and they trip and they fall and they touch foreheads and they laugh. And then Stevani appears, who's just this, like, big, gorgeous combination of the two of them. They're thrilled about it. And then they run back to the gems house and get some, like, mixed reception on the matter. Garnet's, like, ecstatic and silent and just, like, grinning at them. And Garnet says, go yonder and, like, play. So they do. And they go to a dance club. And there's a rave happening. And Sour Cream is the DJ. And he's a pretty good DJ. That music.
His name was Sour Cream.
Yeah, his name is Sour Cream. He's a character.
I completely missed that. Oh my God.
So they dance around at the dance club. And they're having a good time. And then this creepy-ass guy comes over to Stevani. Kevin.
Fucking Kevin.
He's like, dance with me, baby. He announces himself as,
it's Kevin time.
It's repulsive. So Stevani, like, actually gets up to dance with him, starts thrashing around, super angry, splits apart. Kevin, like, walks away because he's like, oh, that's two kids.
That's two kids. I'm out.
Not a sexy woman.
Not a lady.
Not a giant woman.
Connie and Steven just look at each other and laugh for, like, 20 seconds, and then the episode ends.
So the last episodes I had them watch were a storyline arc where they find the communication hub again. Someone has reconstructed it. They're like, oh, we should break this down. We should form Sugalite again. And Garnet's all like, no, we can't form Sugalite. She's too chaotic. Pearl and I are going to fuse instead. And they form the lovely Sardonyx, who's pretty wacky. She's like a showman, magician kind of woman. She destroys the tower and they go home. And Amethyst is kind of sad about it because she feels she's the reason that Sugalite was so chaotic. Because Amethyst is kind of scrappy, kind of a tough guy. And then the tower gets put back up and they're like, what? How is this happening? So they keep forming Sardonyx to take down the tower. And eventually Amethyst goes and makes the discovery. Pearl is the one who's reconstructing the tower because she wanted to form Sardonyx. They confront her about it. They get into a big fight. It ends all sad. And then the next episode, Steven and Garnet and Greg, they go to get away from it all for a little while. I don't actually remember what they're doing there. They're just on a vacation, right?
Yeah. His dad wanted free ice.
Going to the motel. Yeah. Because it was next to the best diner in America.
Oh, right. Because of the diner. Yeah. And Garnet is having these internal struggles because, surprise, well, actually, it's revealed a lot earlier, but surprise for people who haven't seen the series before this.
Like me!
Garnet is actually a fusion between the gems Ruby and Sapphire, and this event of Pearl using her was so traumatic for her that it's causing her to have, like, this inner turmoil, and Ruby and Sapphire break apart. Ruby and Sapphire are basically in a relationship, and that relationship is Garnet.
I just have a question.
Yeah, what's up?
Are all the main gems actually fusions?
No, just Garnet.
Just Garnet?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
It seems weird to me that they are in love with each other and also a fusion when the other gems are not in love and a fusion.
We'll talk about that a little bit later because we're going to talk about what fusion means.
I think there's a point to it.
Yeah, there's a point to it. Eventually, they end up figuring stuff out, Ruby and Sapphire, and Garnet reforms, but she's still mad at Pearl. The last episode, I'm not going to talk about the plot of the episode. I just had them watch it because it's the resolution of this, but basically, they get into danger. Garnet and Pearl have to fuse again to save Steven and Amethyst. So they do, and then everything's okay. But that's the end of that arc. So basically, that whole arc was just about...
permission?
Yeah, permission, basically.
Consent.
Yeah.
But that was the basic summary. And let's move on. Okay, so that was the summary section. Now we're going to move on to talking about the domains. So I'm going to have you guys talk about what you guys brought to this podcast and why you decided to relate it to Steven Universe. We're going to start with Laura.
Oh, cool.
Laura, why don't you talk about what you brought?
So I brought the Circle of Magic. So the Circle of Magic is a quartet of books by Tamora Pierce about these four kids that were discovered all over their fictional land in lots of different countries. And they're all magical. So each of their magics are represented in an unusual way. So most people have magic that, you know, you can move objects without touching them as a kid, or, you know, you create little flashy lights around you or something like that. But these kids are really different. One of them has magic that is expressed through weaving and thread work.
That's cool.
One of them has magic that's...
Wait, hold on. Backtrack a little bit. Like, they just weave? Or they can control things that are woven? How does that work? Wait.
He's a scarf bender.
So a little bit of both.
They carry around a loom with them and they just like crank out.
That literally does happen.
Like they kill people by taking their bodies and literally weaving them together.
Whoa there.
It's a little dark for a children's series.
It's right. That's a little darker than it gets. So the one who can weave can control woven fabrics and can weave things magically, but she can also infuse weavings and thread work with her magic to do specific things.
Oh, okay.
So her name is Sandri. She's like a noble. Her parents were killed, and that's how she first discovered her magic, because she had a thread that she ended up infusing with light.
Just a quick question. I know this is probably not the most relevant part of her character, but I'm intrigued by this weaving power. Does it have to be specifically woven? Can it be like crocheted or knit or some shit?
They go into a little bit more detail. So they don't do crocheting and knitting, but they do talk about needlework. Like, so like sewing and stuff. So it's really mostly about the fabric.
Okay.
Things that are made out of cloth.
Yeah, I was just curious. That's probably not relevant.
Jeff is like, I wear a lot of flannels. I want to know if they can control my flannels.
I'm intrigued by the concept, too. That's kind of cool that they, like, mix the magic with craft work, which I guess is, like, a thing that happens, but especially in young adult novels, magic is all about... oh, I spit fire at bad guys sort of thing, you know? It's about, like, aggression. Yeah. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an interesting take. And it is actually important that it's a weaving, because she's a noble, and so weaving is beneath her. Like, she should be doing fine needlepoint and should doing nobly things.
She's got fucking peasant magic.
Yeah, she's got peasant magic, and it's a problem. Like, people have an issue with it consistently throughout these books.
Jeez.
Plebe.
So she does thread. Briar is... he was an orphan. He has a connection to plants, so he can make things grow, mostly.
Okay.
You can, like, feel nature.
Rose Quartz does that, too.
It's a pretty good power for someone who didn't have a lot of food.
True, although he doesn't really use that to his advantage.
Oh, yeah, he could just, like, grow food.
Yeah, like, grow a potato, like, whatever. You shouldn't have done that.
Potatoes take a long time, man. You gotta bury them.
Seems like the obvious solution.
And then there's Triss. So Triss is a trader's daughter, a merchant's daughter. She's the most epic, I think. She controls weather and nature. When she gets really angry, her hair sparks lightning, and she can, like, make lightning bolts and control them.
So she's like Storm?
She's Storm, from the X-Men.
She's a little bit like Storm. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Or Static Shock.
Yeah.
Static Shock doesn't control weather. He just uses lightning.
Nah, just lightning.
He can't make clouds do anything. Anyway.
So she's pretty cool. The descriptions of her magic are really neat. She can make tornadoes and stuff.
Ooh.
It's kind of broken compared to the others.
I guess. Yeah. Like, if you have the person with the weaving power, you could say anything is weaving.
Yeah.
Like, aren't my skin cells woven together? Boom. Control people.
You get Briar to grow, like, a pine tree, right? And then Triss takes a tornado and grabs all the pine cones and then just throws them at people. Boom.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of do that a little bit.
Sick.
That's a dope combo.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. It's pretty
broken.
Cool. And then there's one more. So then there's Daja. She's something called a trader. T-R-A-D-E-R. She basically lived on a ship. Her family's ship got stuck in a storm and was destroyed. And in her culture, when something really bad like that happens, they basically say that whoever survived is cursed, essentially. So she's an outcast of her culture, and she basically would have been abandoned to die. And she has a metal magic, so she turns into a blacksmith, and all of her magic is expressed through metal and forging.
There's a character like that in Steven Universe as well.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Bismuth.
Bismuth, yeah.
That's amazing.
That's... I didn't even know.
We're back in Bismuth.
She's got jokes.
Since we're running a little low on time here, why don't you give us a real brief reason why you brought this to the Steven Universe episode?
Yeah. At the end of the second book, they get trapped in a cave. And in order to survive, they need to basically fuse all of their magics together.
Oh, okay.
They, like, form a protective ball around them by pushing the plant roots out and weaving them together.
Ah.
And, like, the metal in the earth, they kind of move around, and Triss makes sure that there's air coming through by, like, making a little hole.
Nice.
And Sandry basically legitimately weaves all of them together in a piece of thread that she was holding and makes it into a circle that has four knots, one to represent each of them. And that allows them to communicate mentally. Their magics fuse together, and speaking of fusion, that's why I chose Circle of Magic.
I can definitely see the connections being drawn there. That makes pretty perfect sense to me. Good job. Proud of you.
Thanks.
All right, we're going to move on to Patrick Brem here.
Woo.
Why don't you tell us what you brought and why it relates to Steven Universe?
So,
shwoodly-doo.
I brought the universe of the Amory Wars.
Ah, it's part of a universe, and that's part of the title of Steven Universe. Yeah. All right, Pat already gets the gold star. That's the best connection ever.
Fuck you, Jeff. All right. Essentially, the universe of the Amory Wars takes place within the songs of Coheed and Cambria, which is a progressive rock band.
Who went to my high school, fun fact.
What?
Really? Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Dude, this is sick.
Background knowledge.
All right, so it's essentially like a sci-fi universe, which Claudio uses in order to kind of like vent about his own life. In this sci-fi universe, he takes what's happening in reality and turns it into the story, which is really cool.
Is it a fusion?
Hey. Not quite. For instance, his real-life dad had a problem with heroin abuse. So in the book, Claudio actually writes himself as one of the characters, and Claudio's dad has this virus inside of him called the Monstar virus, which, when activated, can destroy...
The Monstar virus.
It's called the Monstar virus.
Oh, you're giving
because,
me shit for the names
Shut
in
up.
Beast Wars?
Shut up.
Come on, that's so stupid.
Beast Wars was completely terrible. Anyway, so it's called the Monstar virus because when it's activated, Claudio's dad can literally, like, suck the fuel out of a star and kill it.
God damn.
Damn. It's powerful.
It's a lot.
The universe of the Amory Wars is this network called the Keywork, which is a bunch of energy that holds together planets in like a triangle shape surrounded by different stars. So if one star were to collapse, the entire thing would break open and the Keywork would not exist anymore.
And that's not good, right?
Yes, it is not good.
Okay. Just kind of keep up here.
Claudio uses the heroin abuse in real life as that Monstar virus, because when the heroin is, like, in his dad, it turns him into someone who can potentially, like, destroy his family and destroy his universe.
The virus is a metaphor for heroin, is that what you're saying?
Kind of. The virus is just what's inside him already, and then these things, like, the main villain in the story, Wilhelm, he releases all of these dragonflies on Paris Earth, which is actual Earth, but just in the other universe, which when bite you, activate the virus. So he uses the dragonflies as the heroin, and then the Monstar virus was just inside him the entire time.
Sounds trippy as fuck.
Yeah.
I love fucking heroin dragonflies.
Yeah.
Do you? Do you, Jeff?
Yeah, you know, that's what I'm about. I go and catch dragonflies and harvest all the heroin from inside of them. That's what I'm about as a person.
But there's other things happen in his life that lead him to the story. Like, the entire album of Good Apollo and Burning Star 4 is essentially, he just broke up with this girl he was, like, super in love with, and she wasn't feeling it because it was a long-distance relationship or whatever. And he's like, well, you know what? I'm just going to put you in the story, and I'm going to kill you.
Oh, shit.
That's how I'm going to get over it.
That's passive-aggressive as fuck.
They're married now, which is crazy. She's like, yeah, if I look back at the album, I'm just like, whatever. It's penance for breaking up with him, but, like, it's crazy.
Jeez.
That's really awkward.
It's a great album, though.
I would be honored if my ex made an album and killed me off in it.
Yeah.
Like, that means I'm important.
Yeah, that's true.
The thing that drew me between Steven Universe and Coheed and Cambria / the Amory Wars is that Steven Universe uses songs in certain situations to kind of, tell the story and help. Mm-hmm. So you can read the Amory Wars comic books, and you can listen to the music and get two different good experiences out of it. You don't necessarily need to do either one, but usually if you're reading the comics, you'll also listen to the music. But the music is good as a standalone thing, just to, like, you can feel the emotion that he's going through without necessarily needing to know that it's a sci-fi universe.
Mm.
That's a nice connection. I definitely listen to the Steven Universe soundtrack outside of just watching the show. And there are some songs on there that, like, you know, don't even have to relate to the episodes. They're just good songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that.
Now time for some disappointments. Am I right? I'm just kidding. You're going to do fine. Hi, Courtney. Courtney,
Hi.
You're talking about The Land Before Time.
I am. So I chose a Don Bluth movie because most of his animated movies have very heavy topics that he ends up kind of teaching kids, but he does it in a way that's, like, very different from, like, Disney films or DreamWorks sort of films, where it's sort of like there's a lesson learned and it's almost always explicitly said out loud. And I think Land Before Time does something similar to Steven Universe in that a lot of the messages in it are subliminal, and I'll probably talk more about that later, but Land Before Time is a story about this group of baby dinosaurs that come together because they're separated from their respective herds, and they're brought together in these awful circumstances. Littlefoot, he's an Apatosaurus, who's our main character, and his mom just is dead.
I'll be with you, even if you can't see me.
What do you mean, if I can't see you? I can always see you.
And tells him he needs to go to the Great Valley, which is definitely an allegory for heaven and all the baby dinosaurs are dead, but as far as, like, the movie's concerned, these baby dinosaurs are just traveling to this nice valley to live in. It starts off with Littlefoot and Sarah, she's a Triceratops, they're just playing together.
Triceratops.
Just because they found each other, and out of nowhere, her father, like, storms in and is like, nah, you're not doing that, you're not playing with a long neck, and she's like, what's the deal? Littlefoot finds out later from his parents, they, like, run through all the different species of dinosaurs and are like, nothing against them, we just don't hang out together. We stay in separate places. So these baby dinosaurs get separated from their herds and end up finding each other on the way to try to find the Great Valley, and they're like, they'll say, like, shitty, awful, not understanding things to one another.
Right.
And the group will split up, and then they'll come back together and make more progress towards the valley. They kill a T-Rex at some point with a boulder. Through teamwork.
Pretty badass.
Some fucking Lord of the Flies shit.
Wait, is the baby T-Rex in the first movie, or is that...
No, that's, like, the fifth.
Chomper?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And also, Don Bluth has no hand in any of the sequels, so I don't consider them canon.
They all kind of mesh together in my head. It's been a really long time since I've seen those movies.
The, like, nuanced beauty of the first movie is totally disregarded in every way in all the sequels, but I digress.
Just like Shrek.
So they end up coming together. Eventually, the end of the story is that they make it to the Great Valley. They're all together. I relate it to Steven Universe because I think there's something very noteworthy in the fact that it's a story kind of for kids and adults, but it's told through the perspective of children who know they're supposed to stay apart but don't fully understand and keep organically like working together for a common goal. And I think that relates super directly to the idea of fusion, especially in Steven's perspective, where he learns about fusion and in his mind it's like introduced to him, it's awesome,
it's just cool, right?
It's new, it's fine, it's people he loves and cares about. It shows like how kids aren't going to ever pick up on the awful shitty judgments adults make of each other. I think I used a lot of swearing in that description of a children's movie, which makes me feel a little sad, but...
That's fine.
Listen, man, I'm hosting this episode, and I fucking swear, like, every other word, so...
Have you guys all seen the movie?
Yeah.
Yes.
Time Before Time? Yeah.
Okay, word.
Well, it was a long time ago.
Yeah. It's been a long time. Yeah.
Was it Before Time, Pat? Was it that long ago?
Yes, it was.
It totally holds up, just... So you know.
When you first said that you watched Land Before Time, I was like, oh boy, the Neverending Story.
Oh god.
I literally didn't pick up on that until you started talking about dinosaurs. I was like, I'm a fucking idiot. Like, what was I thinking? But I got really excited to talk about Falcor. I'll have to talk about him in another episode.
Hearing the description of Land Before Time now, I didn't realize as a kid all of the metaphors and stuff.
Oh my gosh, it's about racism and grief and like so much heavy stuff for
it
a kid's
Trump's
movie.
It is Trump's Land Before Time.
What?
The racism comment, like, oh, we don't hang out with the Triceratops.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What dinosaur do you think Donald Trump would be?
What dinosaur is who?
Donald Trump? I think he's a raptor, because he likes to act all big and tough, but he's really only like 3 feet tall.
And has small hands.
All the dinosaurs in the movie have names for each other that aren't their actual names, like an Apatosaurus is
a
long neck.
Right?
So there's these tiny ones that attack Sarah. They're called boneheads. Like, they're these tiny, stupid things that are really loud and, like, gang up on people and then, like, scatter anytime there's something scary. So I think he might be a bonehead.
Might be a bonehead.
That sounds pretty close to what a raptor really is, too.
Yeah. Jurassic Park ruined everyone's image of raptor.
I know, man. They made them all, like, 7 feet tall and shit. Like,
that's a real dinosaur, but they're not...
They're not raptors.
Velociraptors, yeah. Which means Dinobots wrong too, but we're not talking about Beast Wars anymore.
Yeah, because Beast Wars is stupid.
Beast Wars is great. Give it a chance, Pat. Anyway, we're not going to talk about Beast Wars. I could go on at length about how great Beast Wars is, but that has nothing to do with this episode other than annoying Pat.
Do an episode on it.
I will. I will one day.
I will never be on that episode.
Well, I'm going to make sure that it's an episode that you're on, Pat. All right. Thank you, Courtney. I know that last bit had nothing to do with you. Mostly we were talking about Beast Wars, but that can be edited out or kept in, whichever. All right. Well, that was some pretty interesting discussion of your guys' domains. Now to move on to the real discussion, the discussion section. Haha.
The discussion.
It's named discussion section because we're going to discuss things.
Discussion.
First, I'm going to ask you guys this question. What do you think about the concept of fusion? Do you think it has some sort of significance in the show? Like, I gave you all these episodes about fusion because I think that fusion is a metaphor and that Steven Universe puts it in the show to make it kind of more digestible and understandable to children. I'm going to open up to you guys. What do you think it represents?
Nose goes.
Thanks for doing nose goes on this fucking audio podcast, Pat. We'll have no proof.
Everybody knows that I touched my nose first.
Laura and I didn't touch our noses. We feel no fear.
That is true.
Yeah,
I mean, it's definitely a metaphor for personal physical relationships, for sex, for love. I mean, it's for boundaries, really.
Yeah.
I think as adults, it's really easy to look at that and say it's a pretty clear metaphor for sex. But I think that it's really important to also look at it and be a little bit more broad about it because there are boundaries for a lot of things.
Right.
Just boundaries, man. Like, that shit's important.
Yeah, right on.
For sure.
There are some other characters that's even better represented in Steven Universe. There's these characters, Jasper and Lapis. Jasper is like one of the main big bad guys in the series for a while. And Lapis is this lost homeworld gem. So she goes home and then she gets captured by Jasper, who brings her back to Earth to go fight down the crystal gems, right? In the process, Garnet beats Jasper in a fight and Jasper's like, oh, it's because you're a fusion. And then she like forces Lapis to fuse with her and they become this crazy, terrifying monster named Malachite.
Right.
Yeah. So then Lapis takes control of the fusion and traps them under the ocean, and they're down there for like a while, like half a season.
Oh, wow.
Like Lauren was just saying about how children would see these relations and understand what boundaries are. And I think people underestimate how much kids understand things like intimacy without sexual connotations to it.
Yeah.
This fusion is just rape.
Yeah.
But there's this complicated moment after their fusion ends where Lapis Lazuli says something like, part of me still wants her back, even though I know she's bad for me. And that's the point where I'm like, oh, that's this sort of abusive relationship thing that I think a kid would have such a difficult time articulating.
Yeah.
But I think if a kid were like in an abusive situation with their family, I think that moment in that series must have been such a game changer for them to see because it's not really something kids should be able to relate to. So I don't think children's shows ever put it out there because they don't want to like
spoil their minds.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, to put themselves in that mindset, because it's pretty dark.
What I really like about the fusion metaphor for sex and relationships in Steven Universe is they can talk about these issues and talk about all the feelings that are involved and have it still be an okay thing to put on a children's show, like no one's parents will object, yada yada, right? Mm-hmm. And then children will understand the relationships between these characters, and then when they grow up to start to experience those things themselves, like Courtney mentioned earlier, that a lot of the metaphors are kind of subliminal, right? They'll have a sort of a subliminal understanding of how to deal with that kind of thing. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to ask you guys some specific questions, which I'm going to, again, stall to come up with on the spot right now. Okay. I'm going to ask you a question first, Laura.
Okay.
So the Circle of Magic, you connected it to Steven Universe because the fusion of their magic is sort of similar to how the gems fuse. Is it just that they're fusing their magic, or are they becoming in sync as people as well? Is it that whole thing going on?
It's definitely, I mean, they talk a lot more about the magic, but it's definitely both.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've fused their magics together, they can see through each other's eyes.
Oh, okay.
They can communicate through their minds if they want to. And that's not something that anyone that's magical can do. They have this special bond that nobody else can understand. It definitely impacts them as people, mostly because they are magical beings. And so that obviously, if they change their magic, it changes them. What I really liked, and what I like to compare the Steven Universe fusion to their magics, are kind of the pros and cons of having that fusion happen. Because all of a sudden the magics are combined, and, you know, it happens to Sandri. She's touching somebody's coat, like the lightning just kind of pops out of her and burns this guy's jacket, who like is a total stranger.
So they like have new powers from their friends that they don't know how to control.
Right, exactly. And their teachers don't know how to control it for them because it shouldn't have been happening. And their magics are unusual to begin with. But there are some good things about having them connected. They're able to stop this insane, crazy forest fire that's going to destroy the entire village. And because they're all working together, they're able to each take these huge columns of fire and weave them into this magical talisman, essentially. And like,
I really like the weaving power.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And they actually do a really good job putting into the story.
It just opens up so many avenues for creative things that they can do. It's just like, oh yeah, this character's got weaving powers. It could mean so many things.
Yeah.
I'm super into that. That's so cool.
It's cool. Sandri teases Briar in the first book by like taking a piece of thread and starting to unravel his pants because he's being a jerk.
Oh,
like,
shit.
It's pretty cool. She's kind of badass.
I wear the pants in this relationship.
So, Courtney, why don't you talk a little bit more about the underlying metaphors in Land Before Time? How tactfully in the series is it done? Or do you think it's like fairly obvious? Or
I mean, I think the racism in it is pretty clear. I think even kids that know what racism is would pick up on that very quickly.
Okay.
But I think the beauty of the movie is sort of how the kids come together despite that.
Mm-hmm.
They all have the influence of their parents having told them, stay away from this group, you can't do it. And then their circumstances sort of drive them to have to work together. And they really start to love each other as this like familial sort of unit. What's interesting is that they're like really awful to each other all the time because they're kids. They say the meanest things.
Kids are kind of the worst.
Sarah at one point turns to Littlefoot and is like, he says, my mom told us this was how to get to the Great Valley. And she was like,
then she was the stupid long neck too.
And his mom is dead.
Shit.
So He just, like, breaks down crying. They get into this big physical fight. When they start to come together and start to put the violence and the pridefulness of themselves aside, they just, like, bit by bit become closer, stop fighting, and, like, get to the end of their journey. It's subtle in the way that Steven Universe is subtle about its message. The kids never turn to each other and just say, I'm sorry. And they never turn to each other and say, like, oh, I shouldn't have judged you. They just stop doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of like in real life.
That's what I love about that and Steven Universe, because they're normalizing the behavior, as opposed to those shows that are like, kids, this is the message. Learn it. They'll come up with some thematic message and explicitly say it.
Yeah, the after-school specials.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a really great line at the end of one of those Steven Universe episodes that I had you watch, the first episode with Sardonyx, where Pearl and Garnet are, like, in a feud, and at the end of the episode, they're like, oh, I wish this was just, like, a cartoon where everything is happy at the end. And then the episode ends right there, and I'm just like, what? Holy shit, that's so funny.
Steven Universe's fourth wall breaking is, I love it. It's been so funny and clever. And they're not too in your face about it.
Yeah.
This is the first time I've ever watched it, and I'm definitely going to go back and watch more episodes.
Yeah, it's pretty sick.
Oh my god, you should.
The only experience I had with Steven Universe before this was the fact that it's pretty big on Reddit. That got me a little afraid, because another very popular children's show is pretty popular on Reddit, too. Yeah.
MLP? There we go.
What?
Everybody on the internet's, like, super into ponies and shit.
Oh,
and
like, okay.
I really hope that this is not another one of those shows, so I just never bothered to watch it, but now I realize that it's actually, like, a solid show.
Yeah.
Friendship is such magic.
Yeah, I've heard My Little Pony is pretty good, too. I've never given it a chance, but...
would you get your own little plush Steven Universe and fuck it in the butt? Like...
I was with you for the plush, but not for the butt fucking.
That's what they do. That's what these bronies do, man. They have conventions, Pat, where they just bring around all these fucking doll versions of ponies that they have sex with.
I don't think they fuck the ponies at conventions.
I've seen some pretty good posts on Tumblr that are like...
Okay, there's some weird shit on Tumblr, man, okay? I don't know if all bronies go around fucking stuffed animals.
Not all bronies, but there are some bronies, I guarantee you.
Not all bronies.
Not all bronies. Hashtag not all bronies.
Well, there's some of everyone who fucks everything. Name a thing, there's someone out there who fucks it, okay?
I don't think anybody has sex with a Steven Universe plushie. I will put my
you just don't know that, though.
Rule 34, man. Someone's doing it somewhere.
I definitely disagree. I'm sure there's someone.
Okay.
Okay, that's enough.
I don't know if it's just because I've grown up and our generation tends to watch things that are either nostalgic to their childhood or just tend to be based towards children. Has kids' media always been so good?
Rocket Power? Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's definitely true. But
Woogie, 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 woogie.
Woogie, woogie, woogie. Rocket Power, greatest kid show in the world. Like,
It was pretty dank.
It was so good.
It's a good show.
But, like, I don't know. There's so many great kids shows that I just have no... Yeah. Like, I don't even really want to call them kids shows because I feel bad. Like, they're not kids shows. They're complex and funny and deal with insane themes of life and... They could teach everyone something.
Rebecca Sugar is really smart. The woman who writes Steven Universe. She worked on Adventure Time for a while, too.
Okay.
The other thing I really like about the show is it's got a lot of feminist themes in it.
Yeah.
Since all the gems are technically agender, they can kind of get away with putting in lesbian relationships into it, like Ruby and Sapphire.
That's true. That's
cool. I mean, they shouldn't have to get away with it, but in our day and age.
But they do.
Not quite to that point yet.
Well, I think Laura makes a good point, because television as a medium used to be like a dumb medium.
Yeah.
Like, people just saw it as a vehicle for essentially 20-minute long commercials for a toy or a franchise.
Yeah.
So I think they have gotten a lot better since we were kids. I'm a little jealous, honestly. I wish I was sitting down Saturday mornings, cartoons, and getting to watch stuff like Steven Universe.
There were a lot of shows, though, when I was young that were good models of teaching kids lessons without, like, flat out being like, this is wrong, kids. Like, Hey Arnold was really good.
Yeah, I also just feel like they're starting to write more kid visual but adult themed, maybe?
Yeah.
There's, like, something that I haven't quite gotten out yet of what it is that I feel has changed, but I like it. I think they should keep doing it.
Yeah.
And it's great.
It's a nice walk between being whimsical and fun for kids and funny, right?
Yeah.
But then also having, like, real storyline that you can grab onto.
I do appreciate that it, like, appeals to adults through its narrative, you know? Because, like, there was Looney Tunes, which was, like, innuendos up the wazoo that was definitely just for the adults watching it. But
and the Animaniacs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Animaniacs was... I'll watch it again today and be like, this is disgusting.
So, Pat, with the, what is it called? The Amory? Amory Wars, yeah. So with the Amory Wars, what you kind of bit onto originally, I think, was the musical aspects of both of these media. So I don't know if you have anything more to say about, like...
I mean, I could talk about how song structure can influence the way he's telling the story.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody did an actual thesis about how song structure in Coheed and Cambria can show a different event that's happening in the comic books.
Hmm.
There's this one song called The Crowing, which in the books is this super pivotal moment. Claudio had just found out that his family has been murdered, essentially, by Wilhelm.
Oh, shit.
And
I hate when that happens.
Since his dad had the monster virus in him, the Monstar virus.
Fucking Monstar virus.
When you reach a certain age, the remnants of your parents' virus in you can activate as well. I'm not sure if it activates in him in a different way or something, but he doesn't go and kill a bunch of stars, I'll tell you that. He becomes the savior of the keywork, essentially. And that title is called The Crowing. So if we look at the song The Crowing, its song structure is very straightforward at the beginning. It's just verse, chorus, verse, chorus. But then at the end, there's another theme that kind of takes over and just repeats throughout the entire thing. And it shows the change in Claudio, essentially.
Oh, okay.
That's cool.
So, like, the musical theme itself is kind of a representation of what's going on with the character?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Wow, that sounds epic.
Yeah.
I like that it's kind of multimedia.
Yeah.
It's a fusion of media.
Oh, man.
It is a fusion of
media.
Yeah. Epic.
Fusion. Some pretty good discussion. I enjoyed all of our conversation there. Now we're going to move on to the rating section. So I'm going to have you guys rate the episodes of Steven Universe that you watched, or Steven Universe in general, if that's what you want to do, on a scale from 1 to 5 bits. You know, the bits, the fried bits. Give me the bits. Give me the bits. Give me the bits. In Laser Light Cannon, Steven, he goes to the fry shop and he just wants some bits.
I can give you actual fries if you want.
He doesn't want the actual fries. He just wants the bits.
I respect
just
that.
Just the bits, please.
The crunchy bits. So good.
I love the bits. Yeah. The bits are the best.
It's just small, greasier, crunchy fries.
Yeah.
Just the bits, please.
So you guys are going to rate these episodes of Steven Universe on a scale from 1 to 5 bits. Someone experienced want to jump in to show Courtney how fucking 1 to 5 scales work?
I am going to give Steven Universe 4 out of 5 bits.
Respectable.
The reason I'm docking at a point is that the episodes are so short.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I felt like I was watching an episode and then I would blink and it would be over.
Yeah.
Like, I literally just took one sip of soup and now the whole episode is over. So it went by a little bit quick for me.
I'd say when you're watching it, like, week to week, it's got kind of an anticlimactic sort of feel to it. It's definitely a show that's much better to, like, watch all the way through.
Binge.
Yeah, just binge it.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to going back and watching it more. I have a feeling that once I get through it, I would probably raise the bits a little bit. A bit.
Raise the bits a bit.
Give me the bits!
But, for a first jumping in, solid experience, great stories, 4 to 5 bits.
All right, someone, Courtney or Pat, whichever. How many bits?
Pat, after you.
Okay, I will give it. I know, I can't remember if you were getting mad at me, Jeff, for giving everything like a 5 out of 5, but like...
No, I respect you giving Steven Universe a 5 out of 5. I'd give Steven Universe 5 out of 5.
Legitimately, if I could go back in my previous episodes and dock everything at least like half a point, I would, just to make Steven Universe be the real 5 out of 5.
Ooh.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I don't give 5 out of 5s, because something great's going to come along.
I was so confused the first time I heard anything about Steven Universe, why everybody loved it so much, but now that I've actually watched it, I'm definitely hooked. I'm going back and watching everything. 5 out of 5.
I'm glad that I've got you on that. Next time, I'll have to get you hooked on Beast Wars.
You won't. You will never get me hooked on that.
I respect 5 out of 5 bits for Steven Universe.
I feel like my input is so not important here. I've watched the show straight through 3 times. So obviously I give Steven Universe 5 bits. I'm probably gonna go watch it again. I thought this was a good pick of episodes, Jeff. It was like a good collection of the experience of fusion and not the bad fusions, but at least some of the negative elements of the fusions and not like this perfect thing.
Yeah.
And the fact that they talk about it, which is important for people who haven't seen the show.
Yeah, I'm really glad they had a discussion about it. That made a big impression.
Yeah.
So yeah, 5 out of 5 bits. So many bits.
Yeah, all the bits.
10 out of 5 bits?
I'd give it a whole order. One of those cardboard boats.
You can't have too many bits, you know, because then it'll just make your stomach feel all weird.
Jeff, you're frozen.
Yeah, the Skype call. Are we good? Yeah? No? We're robots.
I can hear you better.
Everybody else was good.
All right, I think you're okay.
Okay, I was saying too many bits will give you a stomachache. You know, it's a lot of fried food for one day.
Oh, thank God you got back to make that joke.
Yeah, right? I should leave it in there, me saying it like 4 times, and you guys being like, what? You're a robot! What? Okay, I'm gonna give one of you guys the golden pork chop, because if every pork chop were perfect,
nice.
We wouldn't have hot dogs. So the other two of you, you still matter, because
you're hot dogs.
Because you're not perfect, you're hot dogs. Yeah.
Yeah, you're just hot dogs.
One of you is a perfect pork chop, and the other two are hot dogs. There's a reason that I say that, because I think you all did very well. I enjoyed all of your contributions to this episode. I didn't think any one person was lacking. So it was a tough pick. That being said, I think that the golden pork chop for this episode is going to go to Laura Kramer.
My first golden pork chop.
You did, Yeah, you did a very good job at connecting your shit to the topic.
Your shit.
Cool. Well, thank you.
Do you want to give some words?
Yeah. Bitch.
Eddie has been given some pretty stupid speeches after every... Has Eddie really won a Golden Star in every episode that he's in?
Really?
Apparently. He said that.
Oh, I don't believe that.
He said that last episode. Anyway.
My now super delayed speech is, thanks, man. I'm super excited to be a part of the podcast at all, and it's just, I don't know, some days I can talk as soon as I can.
I've got to edit in like a really long pause there, so you just say, my super delayed speech is, thanks man, and then just like pause.
Yeah. That's what I got. Okay. Now, this is a fun topic. I think one of the reasons I really wanted to be a part of the podcast in the beginning is to learn new things and watch new stuff. And hopefully I was able to bring some circle of magic into your lives and got some Steven Universe in return. So
yeah, I'm glad that I was able to.
Yay. Yay. Yay.
Okay, I'm ready for this episode to end.
So this is what I'm going to do. What I'm going to do, Courtney, for you being new on this podcast, is I'm going to say thank you again for listening. My name is Jeff. This week's topic was Steven Universe. You can check that out on Cartoon Network's app. Our next episode is going to be hosted by Laura. So Laura, why don't you tell us what you're going to be talking about?
Yeah, in the next episode, we are going to be talking about Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, and we are going to be looking at the lens of inherent versus learned magic.
Hey, some magics. That's sort of like what you talked about for this episode.
Yeah, I read a lot of fantasy.
There's no weaving alchemist, though.
No, that's true.
Wait, is there? Isn't there someone who's like the weaving death alchemist or some shit like that? What is Scar's name?
I'm going to have to go back and rewatch all the things. Oh, he was pretty epic. I don't know. Did he weave death? He did a lot of shit. He was pretty powerful.
There's something like that.
A sewing life alchemist, Shao Tucker.
Anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
We're going to talk more about Full Metal Alchemist next episode. Well, I won't. I'm not in it, but I'm excited to listen to that episode. You can watch that. Is it still on Netflix?
It's on Hulu for sure.
No.
I don't know if it's on Netflix.
Not.
Okay.
I just looked.
Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood is on Hulu. If any of you listening want to contact us, you can find us on Twitter or Facebook at Geeking Program, or email us at commongeekingprogram@gmail.com. If you're listening on iTunes, leave a review, please. I'm not going to say the number of reviews we have, because last time we did that, it changed by the time the episode came out.
I called it. I knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, you did. You did. So I'm just going to be vague and say we have a few reviews. And then, of course, it's going to change and we're going to have like 500 reviews, which I wouldn't be complaining about.
I don't think we're going to get 500.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be a few. It's going to be just slightly more than a few, just so the universe makes me wrong. But now that I've said that, it could be anything.
It could even be a boat.
Anyway, if you want to learn more, go to commongeekingprogram.com. There was a lot of rambling in this episode, and I'm going to keep rambling to continue that theme as the outro music is starting to come in right about now. All right, bye. This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by me, Jeff Levitt, joined by Laura Kramer, Pat Brem, and special guest Courtney Kuhn. This episode is sponsored by repeatedly forgetting to thank guest stars for coming onto this podcast. The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Jeff, and featuring original music by Colin Ketchin. If you like this show, follow us, tell your friends, or leave a review. We hope you tune in for our next episode on Cinco de Mayo, and thank you for listening to this. I wanted to say that it was insignificant at that moment, so there'd be keep a little bit of the surprise factor.
Oh, you lagged
bad. That was ridiculous.
He's completely frozen on my screen.
You just cut off. Yeah. So you went, as the first, that was completely ridiculous. That's what I heard.
Yeah, for you, it was just like, as then nothing.
That was super fun.
What?